Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Austrian voters have handed a first ever general election victory to the far-right Freedom Party, or FPO. The party won 29.2% of the vote, according to provisional results, almost 3 points ahead of the Conservative People's Party, but far short of a majority. Well, for more on this, we're joined by Nick Thorpe, BBC Central Europe correspondent, and Misha Glenny, who's an author and journalist. Nick, first to you, if we can go through the election results, and where does this stand now politically for Austria?
Well, Claire, it is a remarkable victory for Herbert Kickl's party, the Freedom Party, coming first. They've taken part in coalition governments, of course, in Austria before. Those have tended to end in scandal. This is a party which has been on the Austrian political scene for a long time. It's always bounced back, and it's bounced back dramatically today. That said, it only won, by coming first, it won 56 seats in a 183-seat parliament. And so while it would, in theory, have the first opportunity to govern in Austria now, its absence of coalition partners, unless it can convince the current governing party of the Chancellor Karl Nehammer to go into coalition with it, it could still be pushed out into the cold or into opposition if the others gang up against it, as we've seen in many other countries in Europe.
And that's not likely that Karl Nehammer will go in with them, is it?
Well, if Mr. Kickl, the leader of the Freedom Party, were to step back, I think it is a possibility. If he doesn't, and he's a man who likes to be in the front row, he has described himself as a Volkskanzler, a word from the Austrian history, meaning the people's chancellor, then I think that would not be possible. But it's really, I think, in terms of the bigger context, this is very interesting, as in terms of, you know, the far right or sovereigntist parties, as they call themselves, becoming much more prominent in Europe and really saying they want an end to left-right politics. They say now it's all in Europe about a battle between themselves, standing up for nations, and against those they call as globalists or centralists, who are trying to create a European central state and push down nations in each country, including in Austria.
So you mentioned Herbert Kickl and that he likes to be in the centre and leading and have attention and so on. What more can you tell us about him and his political background?
Well, he's allied with Viktor Orban. He's inspired by Viktor Orban, and I'm speaking to you from Hungary here now. So I think he's a man, you know, who would like to be Chancellor of Austria, and unlike other previous leaders of the Austrian Freedom Party, Josef Haider, I think, you know, he's really much more successful character. And I think, you know, speaking, for example, on recent visits to Austria, speaking, his image, his vision of Austria is what he calls Fortress Austria. He fought this campaign over immigration. And I was speaking to senior Austrian police last week in Vienna, and they were rather excited by him coming to power. They see immigration, illegal migration across countries like Hungary, where I'm speaking from, as key to this. And really, I think this is the reason that he's done so well now, that by cracking down on migration, by trying to stop people crossing into Austria, applying for asylum in Austria or Germany or anywhere else, that this is what Austrians want and what many Europeans want.
And that Fortress Austria ideology, that has been a long held one by this party, by the FPO. I mean, this is what they were founded on back in the 1950s, isn't it?
That's right. But Fortress Austria, like Fortress Europe, how do you create a fortress? You can try building a fence, as Hungary has done, a double thickness fence on the border with Serbia. But Austrian police were telling me last week that around 100 people, 100 to 150 irregular migrants are crossing each day into Austria through Hungary. So Hungary's fence has actually failed on that border. Current Austrian laws are failing to act as a deterrent to people to come. People continue to cross into Austria or through Austria on their way to Germany or elsewhere. And no country has found a way of stopping that because of the pressures of migration and people fleeing wars or poverty.
Okay, Nick, stay with us if you can, because I want to bring in Misha, Misha Glenny. Good morning to you, Misha. Thank you for being with us this morning. So the success of the FPO in this election, what do you think it means now in a European context?
Well, first of all, to clarify where we are with what government will emerge from this, this will all depend on Karl Nehammer's, the Chancellor's People's Party. There are two wings, really, to the People's Party on this issue. Nehammer has said, as Nick pointed out, that he will not enter into a coalition with Kickl in it, but that doesn't exclude the possibility of a coalition with the FPÖ. But Nehammer would prefer not to do that, even without Kickl in government. Kickl himself, he will still be pulling the strings of the FPÖ participation in government, and that would give the Austrian government a distinct right-wing flavour. There are some people in the ÖVP who definitely want to go with the FPÖ because the alternative is to create an unwieldy coalition with the Socialist Party and a smaller party called NEOS. And that will lead to a sort of rather clunky coalition, the like of which we've been seeing in Germany for the past 3.5 years or so. What this means for Europe is if there were any circumstances, and it is possible, although highly unlikely, where Kickl was in government, particularly if he became chancellor, as I say, highly unlikely, but not impossible. And with elections in the Czech Republic, Czechia next year, which Andrej Babiš, the Czech populist, he's actually a Slovak, but former Czech prime minister, he is almost certain to win next year. Then you would see a Central European black bloc of Babiš in the Czech Republic, Robert Fico in Slovakia, Orbán in Hungary and Kickl in Austria. And that black bloc within the European Union would be bigger than the sum of its parts. So there's quite a lot at stake here, not just for Austria, but for Europe as well. I think it's worth pointing out that the socialists here in the capital, Vienna, actually gained 2% of the vote. And what you're seeing in Austria is something that you can observe in many parts of Europe at the moment, which is where the capitals and the big cities are diverging really significantly in political and cultural terms from the other areas. And it's almost like in Austria now, I live here in Vienna, it's almost as though there are two countries. There's Vienna and then there's the rest of the country.
Mm-hmm. Just going back to what you said, you know, let's say Kickl steps away. He won't want to do that. But in order to allow for this coalition to happen, you described it as having a distinct right-wing flavour if that were to go ahead. What would that look like in real terms?
Well, I think, I mean, Nick's pointed out the big question that they'll want to score points on early on is on migration, but you will also see various economic mechanisms introduced, which are likely to see a scaling back in certain areas of the welfare state. There is a distinct Eurosceptic approach within the FPÖ, and they will try and reduce the influence of European Union legislation here in Austria. They are very closely linked with the anti-vaccination campaign of the COVID era. You will see a proliferation, in my opinion, of a lot of sort of QAnon-type conspiracy theories. But the real danger for the EU and for European security is the fact that Kickl and his party are explicitly pro-Russian and anti-Ukrainian. Now, although Austria, like Ireland, is not a member of NATO, it nonetheless contributes to Ukraine through the European Fund for Peace, as it's called. And they will almost certainly try and pull out of that, and they will try and re-establish closer relations with Russia, particularly on the energy front, mm-hmm. which will be very controversial.
And you say, and there are others who would agree with you, that this has echoes of the 1930s. Tell me why.
Well, it's not a repeat of the 1930s, but there's no question that the rise of populism around Europe in the wake of a financial crisis, which, of course, is what triggered the rise of the successful takeover of power of Nazism in Germany and of Austro-fascism in Austria. There's no doubt that as a consequence of the financial crisis of 2008, we're seeing populist movements strengthen all over Europe, and the calls for example, there's quite a lot of Islamophobia here in Austria, the calls to get rid of minority populations. I mean, they're actually talking about deporting people both in Germany and Austria. This has distinct echoes of the 1930s, and although I don't think that the FPÖ's victory is the end of the world, it's something that Democrats around Europe need to take very seriously as an alert to the processes that are unfolding across the continent.
And do you think, Nick, that Democrats around Europe are very much aware of what's happening in Central Europe, in the area that you cover?
Yes, I do. And I think we're seeing a form of that in the sort of response to the Patriots for Europe. This is the group set up by Herbert Kickl, by Viktor Orban, and by Milan Babiš, as Misha was saying there, from the Patriots, from the Czech Republic. So in June this year, so they now have 84 seats in the European Parliament, and you know, it's still a minority group. There's a sort of cordon sanitaire around them. But I don't. But it seems to me that liberals and liberal Democrats across Europe are really hesitant. They don't know what to do. Social Democrats, too, really, with this new phenomenon.
Okay. Well, thank you both, Nick Thorpe from the BBC and Misha Glenn.